All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
It's unfinished business. It's still really clear in my mind, losing Stanley Cup final with the team, and it's like I have a debt to pay to them guys, and we're going to win the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby. Wait, what?
Yeah, okay, Flames fans, just put your C's up. After 7 long years, yo, and you can find me in the dome, chilling with Jerome. Got my eye on the cup, baby, we gon' bring it home. C's flaming on my chest, so you know that it's on. What I tell you about the West, kid, the cup is coming home. And you can find me in the dome, chilling with Jerome. Got my eye on the cup, baby, we gon' bring it home. C's flaming on my chest, so you know that it's on. What I tell you about the West, kid, the cup is coming home. Hey, yo, somebody tell me where the Red Sea at? Where them diehard Flame fan heads be at? Or better yet, where's Stanley at?
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I mean, if that doesn't pump you up, then you better check your pulse. Now, it's been pretty funny because in the last couple of days, there's been a lot of people referring to 04. Like, is this an 04 revival? You can't really think about Daryl Sutter with the Calgary Flames without thinking about 04.
Well, and it feels like 04 in the sense that there is hope for this franchise. There's hope and there's excitement and there's like, okay, enough screwing around. Let's go. That's what it feels like.
Look, if only they could have done this sooner, right? But who knows? Maybe if you look at the current situation with COVID and just the way this team has just sunk to kind of an all-time low here in the last 3 years, things are not going well. Maybe if they did do it sooner, it wouldn't have the same impact. But it just kind of feels like, and maybe, you know, if they did replace the coach earlier, it wouldn't have been Daryl Sutter. But it just kind of feels like all the things are coming to the head in the perfect moment. The stars are aligning, and it looks like I don't know. It just feels like, is Daryl Sutter not the perfect solution in this specific situation? And I don't know, this kind of almost has storybook written all over it.
It feels like the last chapter of the Avengers movie. Pretty much, you know, it's just like, and it feels like the night is darkest before the dawn type of shit right now, you know, like it's just because I think for most people, like, it wasn't really on our radar, I don't think, because it kind of seemed like the Flames would never really go down that road again.
I mean, if you listen to the last podcast, like, have we ever sounded so depressed ever on a podcast before?
Like, dude, we were done. Like, honestly, like, I'm serious. Like, I was out.
Dude, I was literally hanging by a thread.
It did not appear
that they were going to replace the coach. And I still think they waited too long to do it. But hey, I guess like sometimes that's the way, you know, great stories go. I'm assuming this has a good ending to it. We'll see. But when, like you just said, when all seems to be lost and is darkest right before the dawn, like that's the point we're at, right?
Well, and I mean, speaking of that too, is like our biggest frustration was apparently it seemed from an organizational standpoint, they weren't willing to address the biggest issue.
Yeah.
Until they did.
Yeah. So
until they finally did.
So this is a current, this is a prime example situation of like Bradtree Living, Murray Edwards, ownership management. Just when you thought you couldn't do anything stupider, you go out and do something like this and totally redeem yourself. So let's get into the reaction because, man, the timing of it was interesting. Obviously, it was in the works for a few days, but to announce it right after the Ottawa game, it was like like 11 p.m. Calgary time, and then the news breaks. I think a lot of people had already gone to sleep, and you know, people have already shut it down for the night as far as you know, social media and you know, TV and computer. So a lot of people had to wake up the next day. But I was on Twitter, you know, thumbing through the feed and whatnot. And I get this notification that pops up. And when I first saw, my jaw dropped and I'm like, is this real? Is this real? My whole body started, like the adrenaline started to rush through my body. And dude, I was just like shaking. And I was like texting, I sent you like 50 texts. I'm like, dude, that was pretty funny.
It was surreal. Literally, I'd watched the game and I was just kind of getting ready for bed and I was literally just getting out of the shower and my phone is like going wild and I'm like, what the hell is going on here? And like, I was just like shocked, I couldn't believe it. Like seriously, like I thought it was just insane. And like the first place I saw was Steinberg's tweet. And it was just like, it wasn't one of those things where it was like, is this real? It was like, it hit me instantly that it was real. And I was just, my mind was blown.
Yeah. I went through probably at least 2 hours of just blown. And I didn't know what to make of it. I had no, you know, thought around it. I was just like, is this good or bad? I just could not believe what had happened, even though we've been harping on it for so long. And I guess maybe it's because we were taken to that brink of just like, we really didn't see a light at the end of the tunnel. So for it to happen just like that, you know, on the flick of a switch and then the processing starts, right? Because like your initial thought, just like, I don't even know if I like this or not. All I know is I'm in shock.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that it was Daryl, right? Because I think if there was going to be a coaching change this year, I think most of us realistically didn't expect that to begin with. And if it were to happen, I think most of us, considering the financial situation and the COVID shit, I don't think anybody anticipated this would be the time or the year that they would go out and get a guy like this. So that was what was just like, they actually did it.
So we're going to get into the nitty gritty breakdown of this, looking at all different aspects and perspectives. But I mean, first off, it's just like, dude, they did it. The organization stepped up. The management stepped up. Bradtree Living stepped up. They obviously all worked together. We'll get into it. But they literally took the situation and did something that they believe is going to work. And like I said, we'll get into it, but my faith is completely restored at this point.
Same, dude. Like I've gone from literally like darkest before the dawn, dude, like literally rock bottom to like, I'm totally ready to go here. I totally believe again. And I mean, I've been like, it's just, they finally did something.
Yes. They finally got this team, this core, because this specific core never had Daryl Sutter before, right? So this is this core's, you know, and Barb Hartley was a pretty good coach. I think he won a cup in Colorado, did he not?
Yeah, I mean, he won a cup that had a team of like Joe Sakic, Patrick Waugh, Ray Bourque, Peter Forsberg, Alex Tanguay go up and down, Adam Foote. So
yeah, But
that's a pretty stacked team.
And I mean, I look at Bill Peters, and you know, in hindsight, he was a good coach. I just don't think he was a great coach because he brought the team the success we had in 18-19, but then he went in an opposite direction after that. That was his response. So I'm just like, this is this core's first run under an actual legit great coach.
Dude, it's not even close. Like Daryl Sutter, he's missed the playoffs in any of his full seasons twice in his like 18 years. If you count the year he was with the Flames, his first year he was hired and missed the playoffs. He's missed the playoffs three times in his entire tenure as a head coach in the NHL. Has two Stanley Cups, has three Stanley Cup final appearances. Like it's not even, we're, Bill Peters, Glenn Gullitson, Jeff Ward, Bob Hartley, not even in the same, like it's, dude, I'm pretty sure he's one of two other coaches right now who are current head coaches who have multiple Stanley Cups, the other two being Joel Quenneville and Mike Sullivan. Like, dude, this isn't even close. This is like comparing an elite player. This is like saying Jerome McGinley and like Joel Colborn. No offense to Joel Colborn because I love Joel Colborn, but right, like it's, we're not even in the same realm.
Yep.
This guy is the best of the best, period, end of story.
And this is all as a fan base and on this podcast we've been asking for is before you quit on this core, because how much more difficult of a path is that to go down, right? To be like, okay, well, this core, we got to start dismantling it. And then what's that going to look like? I don't see how you're not looking at a rebuild if you go that path. Whereas why don't you just give them one more shot under a bona fide, legitimate, proven coach? That's all we've been asking for. And it's funny because this seems to be where the debate has gone, right? And media just apparently does not understand that there's a difference between coaches. There's a difference between there's such a thing as bad coaching. There's such a thing as good or okay coaching. And there's such a thing as great coaching. And they just don't seem to realize that there's a spectrum there, right? They just feel like, oh, a coach is a coach. And that's all there is to it.
Well, they think a coach is a coach. And because, again, that's what's funny that's coming out of this from the media guys who have been like, it's not Jeff Ward's fault. Because now it's like, oh, the players are in for it. Now we'll really see if it's these group of guys. It's like, no, now we'll really see what an elite coach can bring to the table. Like, it's just, I don't understand how people, like, has nobody ever worked had a boss, or have you ever had a bad teacher? Like, I don't understand how people can just totally discount the effect that coaching can and will have on a team. Like, we have the perfect example of it in Calgary with Daryl Sutter. Look at this organization in the 90s, in the 13 years prior to Daryl Sutter arriving and being hired and named head coach in 2002, 2003. This team and this organization was a tire fire. It was a mess. It was an embarrassment. It was pathetic. We had guys like Don Hay, Greg Gilbert, probably good guys. The players probably liked them. Well, not Greg Gilbert. He was a bit of a dick. But you had these amateur-ass guys running this franchise into the ground. Daryl Sutter gets here and completely resets and instills a winning culture in this organization.
Yeah, with arguably, you know, not even a very skilled, not even a very good roster outside of Jerome McGinley and Mika Kiprusoff.
Terrible roster. Who's the next best player to Jerome McGinley, skater, on the Flames team in those 2 years Daryl was here?
Obviously you have to go to Marty Jelena because of what he did in the playoffs. But what memories do you have of Marty Jelena outside of that 04 run? Do you have any regular season memories of him? Like, did you even really, like, you know? Did he really stand out as this great player before that? That's when he made his reputation.
So like, it's just, you had a good quote about like it's the culture thing and like the winning mindset. Like when you look at what these coaches previous, because the first thing out of Daryl's mouth in that press conference, and we'll get to breaking down the press conference in a bit. First thing he talked about was winning a Stanley Cup. Have you ever heard Jeff Ward talk about winning the Stanley Cup?
No, he's alluded to, you know, winning as a whole, and you know, maybe alluded to, you know, like championship, you know, play and stuff, but he's never strictly gone out and referred to, you know, the team's goal as like, this is what we're trying to accomplish here. So you're right. Like, and, you know, amidst of my whole, you know, it was about 24 hours of processing, really.
Yeah.
But what really, really, really sold me on this was hearing him in the presser and what he had to say. Because like you said, when the first words that come out of his mouth are, I look at this as unfinished business. If you look back at 04, he said he loved Calgary. He loved, you know, and he feels terrible for bringing these guys to the brink and losing in game 7, 2-1 to the Tampa Bay Lightning, looking around that locker room and looking at how, you know, close these guys came and, you know, weren't able to actually win the championship. And he even said, it's like he has a guilt. It's like he feels like he owes this city something. And what that is he literally says, we got to win this. We got to win these guys a cup.
Who says that?
Who says? Who says that is my question.
What kind of coach comes on a press conference and says, I feel I left something on the table. I owe these guys a debt. We're going to win a Stanley Cup for them.
And this is the brilliance of getting somebody later on in their career, right? This guy is so seasoned in he's like, you use this concept, this term all the time. He's so steeped in hockey wisdom at this point, right? Your elders are like, you know, they're the wise ones. They have all the life experience. How much hockey experience does this guy have? What really hits home for me is that he hasn't even left the game, right? He was 5 years ago since he coached, and people are like, oh, he's washed up, has been old school, you know, too old, blah, blah, blah. It's just like, okay, you don't just, he even alluded to this. It's like, there's a blend of, you know, the evolution of where the game has gone to old school fundamentals that absolutely never change. And a lot of that is just how to, you know, communicate with people essentially. But dude, this, oh man, this guy, I'm so bought in right now. And I haven't been this excited to be a Flames fan since 18-19, really.
Seriously, I hadn't looked forward to a game, even though they lost last night. I hadn't been looking forward to a game more so since probably game one of, like, yeah, the 2018-2019 playoffs.
Yeah.
So, and just back to the reaction, because when I first heard it and finally started processing it, like, I was trying to break it. I was trying to find something wrong with it, you know?
Yep.
You
have to, right? You got to rationally look at all angles. You can't just go into blind faith, right? Just because you're excited, but go ahead.
So, like, my first kind of like, okay, what could be problematic with this? My first initial reaction was, okay, this feels like ownership stepping in. This feels like Murray Edwards and company going over Brad Living's head, because it was rumored when Bill Peters was hired that ownership was really high on bringing Daryl Sutter in. And it was also rumored that Brad was resistant to that idea. So my first reaction was, okay, this is coming from ownership. So why? So it kind of felt like initially it was like, I wasn't sure if this was going to be this is a best move for the club, and this is the best move to help the club win move, more so than it was a saving face, make the fans happy. Hey, everybody remember 2004, make everybody nostalgic for a coach who had been here a long time ago and we'd seen some success under. It kind of felt like, coming from attacking it from a negative point of view, that it could be more so a marketing ploy, right? Like, hey, remember this guy that we all loved? Yeah, he's back. As opposed to, this is the best move for the hockey club. So that was my initial, okay, maybe this isn't the best move, until I heard Daryl talk.
Yep. And entry living too, right?
Yeah. And Brad too, because again, like I said, I was solely under the impression, it was my hypothesis that this was a clear message to Brad Living from ownership that he's on notice and they're hiring their guy and screw you. And when the news first broke, it really did feel like it was a ownership reaching over Brad. But then, yeah, you hear Brad talk, and it sounded like it was a collaborative process, which it should be. So, yeah.
And you know, listening to all the player interviews yesterday, you know, when Gio was asked about it, just the wording he used, right? He was referring to management and the owners. He included it. And he just said the message from them, management and owners, is that they want to win. So it was definitely a collective decision. The fact that Tree Living mentioned that, you know, Daryl's been on the radar, you know, for over a year, suggests that, you know, Tree Living, it wasn't over Tree Living's head. I think he was an active part of the discussion. I think everybody's on board. And after, like you said, processing it and hearing everybody speak, man, I am very, very impressed with how this has all shifted. And look, we were in a really dark place on the last podcast, really questioning the leadership of this organization and, you know, how much they actually care about winning. But like I said, totally redeemed themselves. I'm so rebought in and happy to be a Flames fan once again.
100%. And we were even talking about this before we came on. Like, even if they don't make the playoffs this year, because it should have been done earlier, it might be too late. Yep. Even if they don't, I'm still bought in for the next few years now.
Yeah. The fact is that it doesn't even matter. I know one or some people were concerned about the term of the contract. And it's just like, well, what was he going to do? Come in for 1 year and just be another, like, you know,
part-time like Ken Hitchcock thing. Move.
Yeah. And so the more I think about it, the more it makes sense. I mean, if you look at, we're still in a window, like it or like, come on, we're still in a fucking window. We have Johnny Gaudreau. We got Matthew Tkachuk. We got Sean Monahan. Look at the guys we've got on our roster. This is a good team, right? We're just playing like dog shit because Jeff Ward has been running us into the ground. No slight on Jeff Ward, the person. I can't believe this is even a talking issue, right? It's just like, we'll get to that too, breaking that down. But, man, this just makes so much sense.
It makes incredible sense. And again, the thing that I am most happy about, like I said, I'm on board for the next few years because it is now abundantly clear that winning is the goal. You've got, like you said, how are we not in a window? We've got Jacob Markstrom signed for probably too long even, right? Like you've got all the, Sutter even said the blueprint's there. It's just a matter of building it now. Like you've got, again, whether these people like it or not, Whether you're Eric Francis or some other idiot who thinks Johnny Gaudreau is a piece of shit and shouldn't be here, you've got Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk signed for the next 2 years. You have Sean Monahan and Michael Backlund signed beyond that. You have Elias Lindholm signed for three more years. You have got Mark Giordano for a year after this. You've got Noah Hanifin locked in. Rasmus Anderson's locked in. Chris Tanev is locked in. You've got all these guys. Like, I don't. You're in a window here, right? Maybe some of those guys move in and move out, but the core pieces are here, right?
Yeah.
This is undoubtedly a window to win here. And that's why we've been so goddamn frustrated over the past few year and a half, really. It's like, it is here. There is something here. Now these guys finally, there is something here, and just give them a chance. Give them a guy like Sutter. Give these guys a run at it.
That's all we've been asking for, right? And the rebuttal is, oh, they've had so many coaches. They've been through five Which one of those coaches has been a legit bona fide winner? Come on. Like, I just don't I'm so excited to see how he can turn this team around. And the amount of faith and belief I have in this is ridiculous. It's almost, I don't even know if it's healthy.
It's funny because I was like, again, like the first reaction, I was kind of like trying to shield people from like, don't just strictly get caught up in the nostalgia and like what we've seen before. And then like almost immediately thereafter, I'm getting caught up in like, holy shit, I am so excited.
Yeah. And like we were just saying, the 3 years for me makes so much sense. That's the minimum that you need to give a stab at this, right?
Well,
you mentioned, too bad this couldn't have happened sooner, but the fact that, you know, maybe it couldn't have and it's had to get to this point, maybe that's a thing. But I don't know how fast Daryl can turn this team around. I think what's on his side is that this is a good team already. They just need to clean their shit up, especially in the defensive zone. Yeah. I mean, we got picked apart again last night. We should have won that game if you knew how to fucking play solid defense. Right? Against the Oilers. So I don't know how fast he can turn things around. I think because you have like guys like Gio and Rasmus Anderson, who we know are good defensemen, suck right now. So I think that maybe part of that is they're just falling victims to overall bad team defense. I mean, we've said this many times on this podcast. It does not appear like they practice D-zone coverage. I have a you know, I have a sense, you know, you mentioned this before we got on here, that that's probably going to be the first rule of order for Daryl, is start focusing on that. Cause even if you just clean that up to start, you're going to get more wins.
Well, how many goals this year? And you saw it last night, three, every goal was just literally a result of just like
terrible
defensive structure and guys not knowing where they're supposed to be.
Like, I get it. You have to respect McDavid's speed, but you don't just let him walk right down into the circle and shoot the puck. Like, what are you doing, Rasmus Anderson?
And well, like, what is Gio doing on the Yamamoto goal? Like, he literally just completely leaves his post to chase after Leon Draisaitl, and like, and then yeah. Nesterov on the first goal looks lost as shit.
And these are the fundamentals, right? That Sutter's referring to is just like, I think he'll be able to clean this up pretty quick. He can't get here soon enough, in my opinion. I think it's Tuesday is the first day. The nice thing is they got 2 days before their next game on Thursday to readjust. But look, you're looking at all the player reaction, right? In between the last two games before the Edmonton game, these guys are ready, man. And if you're listening to what they're all saying, here's basically what the players are saying. They're excited because they have a guy that wants to win, that knows how to win, right? And then the media is still so hung up on this, like, butt hurt that Jeff Ward got let go, that they're just like, well, what didn't Jeff Ward? Like, what's the difference in the message? You know, all of these reporters are asking, I mean, you have five different coaches. Is this even a different message? Like, do you guys feel guilty? Do you feel bad? Isn't it kind of your fault that, you know, Jeff Ward got let go? It just seems to be ridiculous to me that these guys have no sense that there's a spectrum of coaching, but I guess maybe they're about to see that.
Well, again, it's never been more abundantly clear that 99% of these reporters, A, don't know dick about hockey, B, have never played hockey at any level at all. Like, I can't believe the amount of times the question was asked to Daryl and Brad during that press conference.
And the players as well.
And the players. So you got, like, I'm pretty sure the exact same question was asked at least 10 times. So you guys have been through five coaches. Why?
Yeah. Why? I'm starting to realize now why there's all these cliche answers.
Because there's cliche questions.
Because the questions are so fucking stupid.
And I thought Daryl's answer was absolutely spot on. Daryl said, that's irrelevant. What these guys need is somebody to know. Like he said, these core guys, there's five or six guys who have been here for a while. They need to know that I'm going to stick with them, that I'm going to work with them, that I'm going to do what's best for them. They need stability. They need leadership.
Yep. And it's funny because, you know, the media is asking these players, like, what did Daryl say to you? Right. And they're all basically saying he wants to win. And the people are like, well, didn't Jeff Ward want to win? And obviously he wasn't driving. Like, he doesn't know how, right? Like, last night, the Edmonton Oilers game was to me, breaks this down in a nutshell perfectly. Look at their first period, right? Those guys were so fucking pumped about this change in scenery. And that's what a Zoom call with Daryl Sutter looks like. That's the reaction you get out of your players. A Zoom call with Daryl Sutter, who is not even in the same city as you, can incite that type of an emotional response from your team. Like, that first period was amazing. Then what happened? At the second and third period, right? So here's how I break it down. The first period is an example of how much that team actually cares, how much that team actually wants to win. The second and third period show me they don't know how. That's where the coach comes in. Daryl Sutter knows how to win. How does he know? He's won. So if I'm just reading the players by looking at their interviews, they haven't been playing under a coach that knows how to win. I'm sorry, they haven't. Bill Peters, Jeff Ward, Glenn Gullitson, whoever else was before that. Was it Bob Hartley to Gullitson? Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, Bob Hartley was probably our closest guy. I mean, he's done it before, right? But like you said, he still doesn't compare to the league that Daryl Sutter resides in.
And I mean, when we were talking in the offseason about like how much we wanted a guy who's tactical and has an approach, like, because where, like, even if you look at this team's failures in the playoffs, and we had Versteeg on and we were like, okay, that team was pretty good in 2016, 2017. What went wrong? Like, what could have been done different? And his answer was, if Glenn Gulatin had pretty much known what to do and known when to make adjustments and made better decisions, we probably would have been more successful. That's what this team has needed so bad. So when you're getting smoked by the Colorado Avalanche in the first round of the playoffs, you have a guy behind the bench who knows what to do.
And again, coming back to last night's game, to me, it's a stark contrast between this team, what we can expect under Daryl Sutter, compared to this team, what we saw under Daryl, under Jeff Ward, even Bill Peterson, Glenn Gulatin. Because look at the first period compared to the second and third period. That first period, they came out, they wanted to dictate, and they did. They dictated. Then in the second and third, they didn't really know what to do next. That's where coaching comes in, right? It's like, how do you play when you're up two goals? Well, it comes from the coach down, how do you want that to look. What'd they do? They started to sit back again. I mean, you said this, I think, last week. I can't remember. Maybe you can remember how you framed it. But it's just like, oh, they're starting to sit back now, even though it's still a tie game.
They're playing to stay tied, or when they have a lead, like you saw last night. When they're up 2-1, they're playing to not make it 2-2. Or when they get down, they're playing to not get down by more than one.
Yeah.
They're not playing to get ahead.
Yeah, and that's all. That all comes down to coaching, right? Because what that is, that's a mindset. And the coach dictates the mindset. And I'll tell you another thing that I picked up watching these clips that totally goes along with this. The number one problem, these guys, when the media asked them about the whole shift in change and letting go of Jeff Ward, every single guy refers to him as Wardo. What does that tell you? There's no hierarchy there. There has to be a hierarchy, right? In any organization, if you want it to work, if you want accountability, there has to be a hierarchy. The fact that these guys are referring to him as Wardo, a term of endearment, tells you that they're on the same level. The players and the coach can't be on the same level. They just can't. It's like a parent and a child, right? You have a specific relationship. You can't be buddy buddy. So these player coach things, I'm not saying they can't work, but if they're going to work, there still needs to be a hierarchy, right? Cause you got to have that accountability, right? And these players are already alluding to it. They already know that they're going to be held accountable. You got to have guys like Sean Monahan. When all the reporters are like, well, you guys are really in for it now, aren't you? And he's like, well, yeah, as a player, you want to be the best you can be. So you kind of want a coach that's going to make you the best you can be. Jeff Ward was not making these guys the best players that they could be.
Exactly. And do you think any of the boys are going to be calling Daryl Sutsy or
D-Suts?
Or D-Suts?
I mean, Lucic called him Big D.
It'll be Mr. Sutter to you, please. But yeah, you said it best right there. You want a guy like, again, have you ever like worked under anybody or worked for somebody or been involved in anything? It doesn't matter whether you like somebody or not, whether they're your best bud, whether you call them Wardo. If they're not getting the best out of you, it's not the best relationship.
Yep.
And Jeff Ward was not getting, I don't give a shit what your analysis is. You cannot sit down and tell me that Jeff Ward was getting the best out of these guys. He wasn't.
No.
He never would. He could. It's not in his skill set. He can't.
Doesn't know how. I mean, that's what separates the good from the great right there. I mean, that's the comparison we're looking at. The other thing about this too is like, we've been harping on this for weeks now because this is the media's only go-to. These guys don't care enough. They don't have enough heart. They don't want to win hard enough. They don't hate to lose enough. To me, looking at last night's game against the Oilers, pokes another giant hole in that theory. Look how much these guys care. You saw what happened in the first period, right? That shows you how much this team wants to win. Look how excited they are at the prospect of playing under a guy that's going to get the best out of them. Those guys were fucking jacked.
How many hits did Matthew Tkachuk throw in the first period?
Dude, he was a beast last night. But then, you know, the residue of what you've had to play under for the last 2+ years, go back even further than Glenn Gullison, is still there in the second and third period. They go back to what they know, which is the system we've been watching, which doesn't work. So again, that just pokes another hole in this thing of like this whole crap about these guys don't care. No, they just haven't been guided and shown how.
I think you put it best when you said they want to win. They don't know how.
Yep.
They got a guy who's going to help them. And again, when Daryl said they need stability and leadership, we're going to work with them. Like, fuck, man, that is exactly what these guys need. It's almost unbelievable how they haven't had that yet.
Yep. And again, a prime example of how all this emotion and caring, it means dick all if your systems suck and you're not playing, if you don't have the X's and O's as your fundamental. Because if you have to have the X's and O's as your fundamental first, then that's when all your care and emotion takes it to another level. Like, well, without that foundation, you are spinning your wheels.
Exactly. Think about the group that he took to the Stanley Cup final that the year previous was the worst team in their division. It's the same group of guys. They all worked really hard. I'm sure they all wanted to win as much the year before as they did the next year. I mean, you had a guy like Kiprusoff, that doesn't hurt. But the point remaining, right? Like, you can't start with work hard and then it'll come. It has to be based in structure. Yep. Ridiculous that we're even still talking about this.
And I mean, that's from our perspective of like, get these guys a legit coach and let's see what happens.
And that's what's so funny about the discourse around like, oh, Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau are in for a real wake up call. Yeah, they're in for a real wake up call. Be like, holy shit, I can't believe we have an actual hockey coach now. This is great.
There's actually going to be a guy that can make me better. Like, I'm sorry, this is the NHL. Your coach needs to make you better.
I guarantee you, like, guys like Sean Monahan, who everybody's like, oh, he's in for it now. Like, Daryl Sutter's gonna get the best out of Sean Monahan. It might not be fun. It won't be easy, but he's going to get the best out of him.
Because he knows how. And that's the standard that he operates under. And that's the standard that he communicated in his presser. I put a cool poll out. This got a lot of reaction, you know, almost 750 votes on Twitter in a survey. Which player coach relationship are you most interested to watch unfold under Sutter? Here's some interesting ones. Obviously, the big two are Monty and Johnny, right? We discussed them a bit. Chucky. And hey, If last night is even a remote glimpse of what Daryl might be able to bring even more out of Matthew Tkachuk, inject that right into my veins. Sam Bennett. So here's the other thing, right? Sam Bennett's not going anywhere. You know how I know? Brad Schilling was asked about the potential Sutter and Bennett relationship and how that might unfold. And Brad said, yeah, well, I mean, time will tell, but maybe it might be a match made in heaven. I don't think Brad Treliving has given up on Sam Bennett yet. Given that response, I think he's ready to give Sam one more shot, right? And this is the point we've been driving home. Look, I get it. Sam Bennett has stunk for a majority of his regular season career. Stunk. Okay. But this has always been my defense against that, is that if anybody needs coaching on this team, in this league, it's Sam Bennett. Like, he is a prime example, right? I am so curious to see what that relationship can do for Sam Bennett.
Well, and I think going back to the Ward, like, because all you hear about is this dumb communication bullshit, right? From a lot. Oh, he's a great communicator. The guys love him. They call him Wardo, right? Like, there's a fundamental difference between being a nice guy and having people like you and making your role clear and actually being a true, direct, clear, excellent communicator. Like, I guarantee you, if Sam Bennett's not playing when Daryl Sutter takes over, he will know why. He will know exactly why. He will know exactly what he has to do to play. He will know exactly what he needs to do to get better. You will not hear, when Daryl Sutter's here, Sam Bennett being on the radio and asks, hey, why aren't you playing tonight? And he says, I don't know. I don't know if they're playing mind games. I haven't been told anything. That kind of shit will not happen. Yeah. Ever.
See, that's the territory you fall into when you don't have hierarchy, right? Because if you're all buddy-buddy with people, how do you really have that accountability piece where you can tell Sam Bennett straight up, right? Now Ward's doing all this passive-aggressive behavior, right? Because they're on the same level. That's the only way he can kind of get through to guys. It's just like, it's a recipe for failure, and that's what we've been seeing. So I'm curious, out of that list, the other guy I had on there was Backlund, and for me, he's a sneaky... Well, and then, I mean, you can go down the list, Gio and Rass. I'm kind of curious, out of the roster, what are you most interested to watch?
Well, I think what's interesting is, because again, like, there's all this bullshit media stuff about how these players are in such for a rude awakening. But I mean, like, I think it's going to be the exact opposite. Like, it's not, like I said, it's not going to be easy for them. They're surely going to have to work for it, but I can't imagine any of these guys aren't stoked to have a guy who's going to get the best out of them.
Yeah,
the guy,
they're probably going to really hate losing, eh? they're going to really hate winning.
Yeah, winning sucks, man. Like, it's so stupid.
Scoring goals in the NHL and winning games. Oh, what a rude awakening that is.
Not fun. I'll tell you who's going to have a rude awakening is the media, because they're not going to be able to get away with their dumb, ridiculous, moronic shit questions. I swear to God, if somebody asked Daryl, oh, yeah, what kind of music did you play in practice today? That person probably won't be allowed in the press conference area ever again.
You said this on the live yesterday. If they tried pulling this bullshit of, you know, when you're in a slump and you win one game, oh, is the season turned around now, coach? You really turned a corner there, eh? You beat the worst team in the league. Daryl's going to look at you like you're a dummy, like a complete idiot. Because you probably are.
Because you are. Because it's a dumb question. So it's the media that's in for a rude awakening. But to be honest, like, twofold, I'm actually really curious to see. Sean Monahan is the guy I'm the most interested in. Because, like, for all the shit he gets, like, again, like, we always talk, oh, he does just score goals. They try to make him out like he's the guy who doesn't care for some reason. I guess just because your analysis is because he's kind of mild-mannered and quiet. He's an easy target. Yeah, he's such an easy guy to go after. He's a guy I'm really interested to see how he performs under Daryl Sutter.
It's funny because you get a lot of argument that, like, oh, the Kings were in a league above their own. These teams are nowhere close. And it's just like, there's actually a lot of comparables. Like, is Jeff Carter and Sean Monahan not, like, a very, very similar comparable?
Exactly. Guys who kind of have a reputation for being one-dimensional, don't really give a shit. Like, okay, Jeff Carter won 2 Stanley Cups under Daryl Sutter and was awesome.
And instrumental in helping bring a championship.
Exactly. So I'm really interested to see how Sean Monahan responds to this. I have no doubt he's going to be better. Maybe his point totals go down, but, like, he's going to be better, man. And, like, the other thing is, too, that's so interesting is, like, everyone's, oh, these guys aren't a Sutter team. No, they're not a Sutter team. They don't have the personnel. Are you telling me guys like you mentioned Backlund, Elias Lindholm, Andrew Mangiapane, Rasmus Anderson? These guys are Daryl Sutter's dream. Dude. You're telling me Elias Lindholm is – you're telling me Daryl Sutter isn't salivating at the prospect of having Elias Lindholm on his team or Andrew Mangiapane or Matthew Tkachuk? Like,
again, it comes down to this low-resolution perspective of, like, oh, a Sutter team is a team that was good under Sutter. It's just like that's – Sutter was good because the team was good.
Like, look at the 3 teams he's coached in the NHL. The San Jose Sharks in the late 90s, 2000s, the Calgary Flames, and the LA Kings. I have a hard time finding a lot of similarities between all three of those teams, other than the fact they all had elite goaltenders, and now Darryl's got that again. Like, I mean, you look at those San Jose Sharks teams, this is a long time ago. Like, sure, they had guys like Owen Nolan and Mike Ricci, but they also had guys like Vincent Dompoos and Sundstrom and Alex Korluk. Like, it's not like these were just like a bunch of big brute. Like, I don't know where this, I guess it's just lazy reporting and lazy narrative that they're just big oafs. Like, look at the Kings. Like, sure, they had some big guys in their bottom six, but I mean, okay, I guess we're just going to pretend that Drew Doughty wasn't one of the most offensively skilled defensemen of his generation 5-6 years ago. And like, we're right. Just going to.
What was the biggest knock on Doughty's game before Darryl came around?
Right?
Can't play defense?
It's like, it's hilarious how stupid that is.
Well, it is. It's just like, because Darryl's, the team that he coached was big and bruising, that means, oh, that's Darryl. That's the way Darryl coaches.
Like, and did Darryl build that team?
No.
No, he showed up.
My rebuttal to that is Darryl has a good team because he knows how to get the best of his players, whatever the makeup is.
Exactly.
So look at the team we have now, the skill that we have. He's going to give you more of what you have, is essentially what he does. So if you're big and bruising and whatever, like the LA Kings, you're going to get more of that because he knows you got to exploit every single player. You got to get the most out of every single player that you can.
And I mean, I think the criticism against him that he's too old or whatever, or his game is outdated or his game is archaic. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Do people watch hockey? Do these reporters, these media people, have they watched the Flames? Have they been paying attention to what's going on in the league the last 20 years? Like, do you last know who Darryl Sutter is? If you are a true Flames fan, do you know what? Like, I was like 10 years old and I remember when he was hired. And he's talking about things like possession. Like, this is back in 2002. He's talking like he has always been up with the times, a bit of a progressive guy. He's one of the smartest hockey guys there is. Do you think he's just like, even hearing him talk at the press conference, he knows how he wants his team to play. And he said there's fundamentals that never change. They asked him about analytics straight up. And he said something to the effect of like, the best teams use them to their advantage. When we were in LA, we used them to our advantage, but we also combined that with a game that was conducive to winning the Stanley Cup. Like, where do these morons get this idea that he is outdated or like, what are you talking about? Like, give me a break.
Are you surprised? It just seems like every single question that comes out of the media's mouth proves that they're like, they just get dumber and dumber with every question.
Oh, do you think this old school type of game? What old school type of game? Here's Darryl Sutter's last 3 years as a coach. Here's some shot metrics, some underlying metrics, and where the Kings rank. Again, this is post Stanley Cup winning team LA Kings. Like, this isn't them in their prime. Possession in Sutter's last 3 years, Corsi 4, shot attempts 4%. They're first. Scoring chances 4%. Second. This is in 3 years. This is over a 3-year span in the league. Wow. In the league. High danger chances, 4%. Fourth. Expected goals, 4%. Second. Are you kidding me? That's over a 3-year sample. You're telling me this guy is old school and out and archaic and his game won't translate? What are you talking about?
But it's a different team.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, and 5-on-5 metrics, they don't have anything to do with coaching.
And hockey fundamentals and hockey fundamentals change whether or not Johnny Gaudreau's on your team or not.
So, I mean, do you still have to score more goals than their team to win the game?
I think that's still a rule.
Is that still how you win and that's how you measure success?
I thought it was whoever had more fun and whoever cared harder won the game.
Whoever has the best playlist in practice.
Right, I forgot.
Give me a fucking break.
It's ridiculous. It's moronic. It's lazy. I can't believe the amount of I thought there was lazy reporting. I've been proven even more so right over the discourse on Darryl Sutter. Yeah. Ridiculous.
How the amount of butthurt going around with the media. And it's like, apparently for some reason it's gone to this point of like, oh, it's an attack on Jeff Ward, the person.
Literally Francis was on the radio and he said, those players should be ashamed of themselves. They lost this coach's job.
It's their fault. It's their fault that Jeff Ward was way in over his head. and didn't know how to get the best out of his players. It's their fault.
I'm just blown away.
They should have been submitting, you know, theses on a nightly basis on how the coach should get more out of them.
It's ridiculous.
That's the difference that we're talking about with great coaches compared to mediocre coaches.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to start to see it here in the next 2.5 years under Daryl Sutter.
Absolutely.
The other comparable that interests me, right? Because, you know, people are pretty much given thrown in the towel with Sam Bennett. And I don't blame them. Like I've thrown it in, but I'm picking it back up now. Now that this is all I've been asking for. Can we just see what these players can do under a real head coach? That's all we're asking for. We finally got it. Now, if they can't figure it out, if they can't turn their game around and they still stink under this coaching, and you got to give it some time for them to adjust, because the systems they've gotten used to and the habits that they've created, that might take a little bit of time to fix. But a guy like Sam Bennett, I'm picking my towel back up, because the guy that we've mentioned out of all these past coaches, who's probably, you know, the best out of the bunch, was Hartley. Sam Bennett had the best season of his career so far as a rookie under Bob Hartley. So if we're going to use that as any metric, you know, and again, Sam Bennett is where he's gone, you know, in this last 2 years, especially this season, he is going to be a project and a big project at that. But with the type of person that Daryl Sutter is, he's probably going to take that on very willingly. And just, I don't know. I think to me, that's a really interesting one. And also, right, you know, I was talking to somebody on Twitter about this, about Benny, and the reason why they're done with him is he's lazy, he's sloppy, lazy penalties, blah, 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 inconsistent. And I'm looking back to that Kings team and say, wasn't that kind of the knock on Dustin Brown for the longest time, you know, before Daryl Sutter ever arrived? It's like very, to me, it's another very similar comparable. And, you know, how instrumental was Dustin Brown in those championships?
Well, he was their captain, so and he was awesome. So pretty good.
Out of that list, though, you know, that I had a couple of days to think about it. Again, Backlund's a sneaky one for me. If Daryl can really squeeze that orange to the full extent, Backlund might be getting top line center minutes, man.
Which you know he's going to do. And again, like, I think he's going to love having Elias Lindholm. And the thing that I think is going to be really interesting is there's not going to be any more bullshit about like who should play with who. What should the lines be? What should the pairings be? Like, Daryl's going to know what to do, right?
Yeah.
It's not going to matter as much. It's not going to be, there's not going to be any more banging your head against a wall, square peg, round hole type shit. He knows what he's doing. And like, maybe it sounds like we're putting too much faith into this guy, but I mean, that's why we've been harping for a guy who's a pro, because then you can put your faith in him. Yep. And the players can put their faith in him. They know that whatever he's doing is in the best interest of the team, is in the best interest of winning. And I think that was another good point you brought up. Was like, he doesn't give a shit that he's like, right? Like, he doesn't have anything to prove to anybody or is looking to advance his career.
Yep.
He just wants to win. That's it. That's Daryl Sutter. That's huge.
Daryl Sutter does not need this.
Exactly. He wants this.
He doesn't need this for his career. He doesn't need this for his pocketbook. He doesn't need this for any other reason for than what he said, is that he looks back at the 04 season as unfinished business and says he wants to win these guys a cup. The other thing that I thought was pretty cool too is, you know, he went through some of the names like Doc Seaman, Ken King, there's a couple other guys that have passed since he's been here last. And, you know, he's still saying, referring to winning a Stanley Cup. This is what just like gets me jacked, is coming in day one. His sights aren't, okay, we want to turn this team around and, you know, be competitive and, you know, win, get in a playoff race and see what happens. And he says, no, like, day one, the only thing this guy is looking at is winning a Stanley Cup. I mean, that's where his focus is. Everything else is just noise and in the way. Get the fuck out of the way. So the reason why these players are excited, you saw in the first period, like Monahan said, if you're a player, you want to win. You want to, like, you want a coach to get the best out of you, as even if it's going to be hard. Like, these guys, we've said this so many times, you don't become a player and get to the NHL because you don't care. Ultimately, these guys care, but they can only do so much. They're so focused on performance on the ice. They need guidance. They need coaching. They need a guy like Tortorella. You know, they need a guy like Daryl Sutter that knows how to demand the best out of you. And yeah, it's hard. It's work. What like great thing in life that you ever accomplish? Like, why do you think it's such a great accomplishment? Because you had to fucking work your ass off.
Daryl even said that in the press conference.
You had to dig so deep into the recesses of your own being and like just pull things out of you that you didn't ever even knew you had. Right? That's development. That's bringing the best out of players. That's what Daryl's talking about. Like he just said, that's where his sights are set. That's why the players are jacked, because they're like, yeah, I want to be the best I can be. This guy, I believe he can help me do it. And so do we. We're pumped.
It's mind-blowing how pumped I am right now.
I am so rebought in. It's so funny how we can go from two extremes, right? Such is the nature of sports.
And that's why it's great. And that's why I said ride the wave of emotion last time. And I mean, like, seriously, like, this is the best chance this team has had now, I think, over the next few years to win a Stanley Cup.
Yep.
That they've ever had. Like, you look, it was a different game back then, but you look at what Daryl Sutter was able to squeeze out of those guys. Like, again, you kind of forget he was only the head coach for 2.5 years. Because he just took off to be GM. And that's another criticism. Oh, he's been out of the game so long. Okay, well, he's been working for the Ducks for 2-3 years.
He's never left the game.
And the last time he left the game for an extended period of time or left the head coaching position for an extended period of time, he went between the coaching the Flames in 2005-06 to coaching the Kings and coming in mid-season in 2012. He won the Stanley Cup and led them to the most incredible Stanley Cup playoff performance of all time. They only lost 4 games that spring. Won yep. The Cup in 60, like 20 games, which is insane.
Do you want to know why? Because when he steps away from the game, he does not stop thinking about it. Guaranteed this guy thinks about hockey all day long. When he's out on the farm,
dude,
getting up at 4 a.m. to feed the cows, like he's thinking about, obviously now he's thinking about this Calgary Flames team.
Well, and that's another thing that really just like, man, his hockey knowledge was on full display in that press conference. He was just like pulling shit up about like the players on the Flames team, just different little like factoids. Like he knows what's going on.
Yep. He's got a better handle in 2 minutes of this Flames team than I've heard in 2 years under Jeff Ward.
Exactly. His press conference gave me more insight, more analysis than I've heard
in
5 years from people in this organization. So like if he can squeeze what he's like, again, in his 2 years, full years behind the bench in Calgary, a Stanley Cup final appearance and a division title. How can you not be just absolutely jacked to the gills about this shit right now?
Yeah. Now you were saying at the time he was a player, or a coach slash GM. He was doing both roles. And after that run, right, he took just went full time into GM mode. I remember, man, at that time, seeing the difference in style of play.
Yeah.
And just being like the contrast was there. And you're just like, fuck, Daryl Sutter was an amazing coach. And now he's the GM and he wasn't an amazing GM. And she's like, man, I just remember like walking away after that whole experience, like, wow, I wish Daryl Sutter would have never left behind the bench. I think
that was the narrative forever. It was like, why he's such a great coach and he's such a shitty GM. Why didn't he just stay the coach? Like, he was such a good coach. Because that's, yeah, like you said, you'll notice it almost immediately. The next year, they had a great year, that 05-06 year. They won the Northwest Division. They placed third in the conference. But then Daryl vacates the position. Jim Playfair takes over. And you saw a lot of what we've seen with Ward. Jim Playfair was not ready. Was not head coach material. Has never had a head coaching job again, I don't think. Yeah, I know he's with the stupid Oilers now. But that's when the coaching carousel started. Playfair, Keenan, Brent Sutter, Hartley. It was a mess after that. And I mean, like, he's such a good coach. It's almost unbelievable that it's kind of weird that they hadn't gone to this sooner. Seeing that I think the ownership have kind of wanted to go back to him for a while.
Yep. And like we've been saying, we hope it's not too late. What, you got 31 games by the time he gets back? So they're going to have to adjust quickly. I think what they have in their benefit is that they already have good players. Like, it's not like this is, you know, a Joe Quenneville going into, you know, the Florida Panthers situation. Like, I mean, they got good players there, but I mean, we have a better roster. And it's not the same as Tortorella signing an extension under a Blue Jackets team that just traded away all their, or lost all their, you know, their big pieces in Panera and whatnot.
Yeah.
Daryl Sutter's coming in with a good team. So that's the other thing here is, like, this team's better than it was in 04. Look, go down the roster.
Dude, it's not even close.
It's not even close.
It's not even close. Like, you had Jerome Ginla and Mika Kiprusoff, and that was it.
So, like, what you're going to see under Daryl Sutter, and look, the amount, like, the emotional thing, right? You saw this last night against the Oilers. You come out in the first period. You can't play that way all the time. You can't rely on all out emotion all the time. It's just not sustainable.
Tell that to Jeff Ward.
Yeah, right. Like, if you're trying to win the championship just on emotion, you saw what happened. You can't even make the fucking playoffs.
It's so funny to me because how long have we been saying, like, okay, even if that is your thing to be emotionally engaged, that's not a good foundation. You literally just said it 10 minutes ago, right? And because it can only last, there's diminishing returns on that. It's not sustainable. And then I see media people retweeting what Bieksa said last night. Well, I don't think they can sustain that for a full game. It's no shit. Then why have you all been so on board with this dumbass shit about emotional engagement for 6 months?
Yeah. So what you're going to see differently, right, in a game like last night, you're going to see 80% of that emotion, or maybe even 65 to 80%, somewhere in that range, the amount that is sustainable, right? But what you're going to see beneath that are the things that are sustainable. How you approach the game fundamentally, the X's and O's. Structure. That's why you have to start there. That's your foundation, your fundamentals,
yeah.
Right? Then everything on top of that is bonus. So this is where I'm at. It's just like, okay, I get it. The Kings were a good team, you know? But they were also a good team because they had a great coach. So I'm really curious to see. And like we said, it might take a little bit of time, you know, for the fundamentals to shift over, but really curious to see what Sutter can do with this amount of skill.
Yeah. And I think here's another low resolution media thing right now. It's like, oh, they're going to be so defensive. Daryl Sutter's all about defense. Guys like Gaudreau are going to suck because all he focuses is on defense. Yes, he does focus on defense. But you know how he focuses on defense? By having the puck. He focuses, that's his Kings teams. Like, I just rattled off that list of his possession stats a couple minutes ago. Those Kings teams were possession monsters. And there's a really good quote. I pulled up an article from 2014 when Daryl Sutter, the article is called "A Reminder from Daryl Sutter: Don't Mistake Puck Dominance for Defense." So they're interviewing Daryl Sutter about, you know, how his team plays, how this team is so good defensively. And Daryl says, you can't give the puck up. We don't play in our own zone, so there's not much defending. Then he goes on, because people were giving him shit. Like, remember when they acquired Marian Gabrick with the Kings?
Yep.
Oh, Marian Gabrick won't be able to play under Daryl Sutter.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
He won a Stanley Cup with him. So Daryl Sutter specifically asked about how Gabrick fits into that system. And Sutter goes, the game has changed. they think there's defending in today's game, but no, it's about how much you have the puck. And listen to this part, especially because it's very applicable to the team we've seen for most of this season. Yep. Teams that play around in their own zone say they're defending, but they're generally getting scored on, taking faceoffs, and need a goaltender to stand on his head if that's the way they play.
Does that not sound like Jeff Ward to a T?
It's exactly what Jeff Ward is.
And this is what gets me so jacked, is you have a great hockey mind like Darryl Sutter that gets it. Because, I mean, we've been saying this for a while. Under Jeff Ward's system, Jeff Ward thinks that defense is defending. Whereas Darryl Sutter knows that defense is get the puck back, right? Like, if you look at Jeff Ward defending, collapse and defend, collapse and defend, keep the guys to the perimeter, keep them away from the danger areas.
Well, how did Connor McDavid score that goal last night?
Yeah, right. Picked it apart easily. Whereas Darryl, right, his defense is all about get the puck back as soon as you can so that you don't have to defend.
He said in the press conference, you want your name to be etched on that puck. That's his philosophy.
Oh, man, I'm so ready for this, dude. I'm just like, oh, my God.
It's incredible how ready to roll I am. And I, like, again, like all the criticisms, oh, it's defense first. Yeah, it's defense first. But come on, like the Flames are going to finally play structured hockey for the first time in a long time. And I guarantee you're going to see success on it. Might not be enough to get them turned around completely this season, but man, at least I won't.
It might be too late. Yeah,
it might be too late, but at least I won't be ripping my eyeballs out. But like, it's kind of incredible to see how quickly he was able to come in and turn the Flames around.
Yeah, I was a Zoom call.
Yeah, but with, I mean,
one Zoom call.
They looked like a totally different team. But I mean, I look back. I was looking at the when he was first hired in 2002-03 after Greg Gilbert, who sucked ass, was let go. The Flames had lost 11 of 12 in November, and that was it. They couldn't make the playoffs. But after Darryl came in, they went 19-16-8-1 under Darryl Sutter. Here's their team. Jerome Iginla, Craig Conroy, Marty Jelena. Like, Tony Ludman was fifth in scoring on this team. Stefan Yell was sixth in scoring at 25 points. That's the team he had to work with, and he got that team to be like a 500 team.
Yeah.
Then the next year took them to the Stanley Cup final. This is all we've ever wanted, is a guy who can do this. This is all we've ever wanted. Just give these guys a chance with a guy who knows what he's doing.
If they can adjust really quickly, and honestly, man, if they just spend a week or two on their defensive end, I think they're going to be okay. And they're not that far out of it. They're 5 points out, essentially, right? There's three teams that you're 5 points out on. You're basically 5 points out on the Oilers, give or take a game a hand or two. You're basically 3 points out against the Habs, and you know they got a game in hand, so that's kind of like 5 points. Same thing with the Jets; they're all right there. So
you're going to be playing only those teams.
Yeah, good point. I mean, if they can even make the slightest adjustments pretty quick, it's still not too late. And I think, look, if you can continue to build over the next 30 games, I'm comfortable playing the Leafs if we have to in the first round. And hey, just the way that this whole season's been a write-off, even if we don't make the playoffs, I'm still in a good headspace because we're going to keep building on it next year. We don't have to worry about any contracts, right? But I still think we can make the playoffs this year.
Yeah, I do too. And I get like, it's so refreshing
to care
just,
again,
to just care and be on board and know what the goal is, right?
Like, to and know, actually believe. Yeah.
Yeah. To believe. And you have buy-in from the fans after 2 days. Imagine how much buy-in you're going to get from the players.
Yeah, there's been a lot of people pushing back on this defensive thing. I think the only reason why I want to bring this up one more time is I just want to say this out of those players, with the player coach, you picked Monty as kind of your guy. I think Johnny is going to be mine. Out of all the players that interest me the most on who is going to flourish the most, I'm going to predict that Johnny Gaudreau flourishes the most under this coach.
I have zero doubt in my mind Johnny Gaudreau is going to be fine and going to be great. Like, again, it's got to be the lowest of the low. You have to be absolutely not paying attention or have any idea what you're talking about to look at Daryl Sutter and say, yeah, skilled guys aren't going to play well under him. Like, are you kidding me?
If you just use your logic for 2 seconds, guys like Johnny Gaudreau, if you increase the amount of time they have the puck, it's going to be a direct correlation to increased amount of goals created. Guys like Johnny Gaudreau, they create things out of nothing. So the more they have the puck, the more they create things out of nothing, the more chances generated leads to more goals created. So, I mean, it's just one leads to one. So, you know, if they're going to increase the amount of time they have the puck 5-on-5, when they're in their end, they're not just focused on, like, literally, what do they do under Ward? It's just like they allow the other team to come right into the end, into their own end, into the defensive zone. And they just kind of sit back and wait till what? The goalie makes a save, and then they try and get a rebound. If there's a rebound, they try and win that battle, or the goalie covers it up. That's just kind of like, it's just like one big funnel to your own net under Jeff Ward. It's just ridiculous.
It's exactly what it is.
So the fact that we're going to switch that around and 5-on-5 possession is going to be a thing once again, like it was under Peters.
Well, again, the first period, and again, maybe this is just them, like, when's the last time they were out shooting the opponent by like tenfold in a first period?
18, 19.
Like, it's ridiculous.
Or I guess they did it in the playoffs a bit. But,
and I mean, the other thing too, just to get over this, like, he doesn't like skilled players. Like, again, have you not watched? Like, think about the team that he coached in 05, 06. He traded for Christian Huselius, who played his best hockey under Daryl Sutter. Like, I don't get this. Like, Damon Lankow's not a big guy. Like, Chuck Kobusu, Matt Lombardi. Like, lots of really skilled guys filtered through the Calgary Flames in Daryl Sutter's time here. And when he was coaching, flourished. So, like, that's the laziest shit I've ever heard in my entire life. Again, like, Jerome McGinley, just because he's a tougher guy, he's not skilled.
Yeah, right.
Like, was Jerome McGinley known for his excellent defensive game? No. In fact, he was pretty poor at it. Did he flourish under Daryl Sutter? Yes. Give your head a shake.
If you just look at last night's game, I think the difference you see is they come out in the first period, they'll dictate.
Because they're going to know what their role, like, that's what Daryl, another thing he said was, like, somebody asked him, how do you fix this? He said, we fix it shift by shift.
Yeah.
We have goals that they know that, like, you know what you're doing on a shift by shift basis. You know what you're doing.
And they won't just have to rely on their emotional level to get them results, because that's all you heard under Jeff Ward is like, unless you're having an emotional period like you did in the first period, you're not going to win games, which is complete bullshit. Right? Like you just said, shift by shift, coming down to X's and O's fundamentals, right? Are you in the right positions, you know, at the highest percentage time possible? Because that's what it comes down to. It's just numbers, right? If you're playing in your right position, you know, more often than not, you're going to get the puck back more often than not. So when you get out of position, right, where you open up errors for guys like Connor McDavid, just go down and score at will. I mean, that's what you saw.
Yeah.
You get a guy like Connor McDavid coming into you let him enter into the zone at will. You back up, let him come down to the circle at will. Let him get shot off at will. I mean, this is a numbers game. If he gets that ability to do that, he's probably going to score at least 3 times out of 10. And that's what we saw last night. But I think the difference you'll see in a game last night is they're not going to rely 100% on their emotion to win them games anymore. Like that was the narrative. That was the code. That was the coaching style we were seeing under Ward, right? So you take that first period, I think you dial that back. Instead of they'll still use emotion to drive them, but they're going to be mostly driven by proper positioning and proper hockey
structure.
Right? Structure.
They're going to know where they're supposed to be.
And then when they get a lead, now they're going to know how to play with a lead, because this team doesn't. Under Ward, they did not know how to play with a lead. because that whole defensive thing I was just explaining, this funnel to the net, when they had leads, they just open up the funnel even more. Come on in. Everybody come down. We're going to rely on our goaltender until we get the puck back. Then we'll probably just dump it in the zone and give it to you again to do it all over. Like we are not going. That is terrible hockey. We are not going to see terrible hockey under Darryl Sutter.
We're going to see structured hockey, and that's all we've ever wanted.
I think the last thing I might want to, discuss here is I did another poll. This is just going to get a temperature of the fan base. And this was pretty soon after the Darryl Sutter announcement. It was the next day, so there's some processing time. But just asking people, what do you think? So 57, this is 400 people. 57% of people love it. 29% of the people, they're intrigued. They want to see how it plays out. 11% are just like, fuck, as long as it's not Ward, I am game. And only 3% of people don't like it. So for the majority, this fan base is on board. This fan base is bought in. I know we're definitely part of that.
Yeah. And I just can't that's what's so exciting for me when you hear Darryl like saying he's going to straighten it out. They're going to get to work. There's specific things he wants to do. Like, man, that is so much better to hear than just bullshit about process and communication and all this other shit. It's like, we're going to fix this. And he says that, and you know we can do it, and you have confidence in it. And man, we needed this yesterday. We needed this weeks ago, but better late than never. After 7 long years, yo, and you can find me in the dome, chilling with Jerome. Got my eye on the cup, baby. We gon' bring it home. C's flaming on my chest, so you know that it's on. What I tell you about the West, kid, the cup is coming home. And you can find me in the dome, chilling with Jerome. Got my eye on the cup, baby. We gon' bring it home. C's flaming on my chest, so you know that it's on. What I tell you about the West, kid, the cup is coming home. Hey yo, somebody tell me where the Red Sea at? Where them diehard flame fan heads be at? Or better yet, where's Stanley at? We coming for your cup, man. Calgary's back. Uh-oh, down to the wire, man. Look around now, C's on fire, man. This year, we not sweeping them, we blowing them out. Give them 4 quick L's, then we throwing them out. So how you want it? Even strength, short hand, or power play? Backhand, wrist shot from the point anyway. Round the neck, behind the back, any line, we on attack. One time, breakaway, 5 hole, it's like that. And as for Kipper, baby, he's anything but soft. Break, 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 breaking them off. Stop your cold, got him on puck patrol. The mass puck leak straight, stole your goal. All y'all really need to know is that our team is deep. Not as deep as we're gonna bury teams this week. So make a choice who you want, Simon or Ollie Wall. Either way, you catch a beating, that's the way that we roll. Your offense is like no fence, too easy for me. Your defense is like E-fence, where's the D? Anybody seen the D? They didn't bring no D. And you can find me in the dome, chilling with Jerome. Got my eye on the cup, baby. We gon' bring it home. C's flaming on my chest, so you know that it's on. What I tell you about the West, kid, the cup is coming home. And you can find me in the dome, chilling with Jerome. Got my eye on the cup, baby. We gon' bring it home. C's flaming on my chest, so you know that it's on. What I tell you about the West, kid, the cup is coming home.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.